From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Clearly, something had to be done about Salt Lake City's homelessness problem. The Road Home Shelter in downtown was supposed to be temporary, but some stay for years. It's become overcrowded and overtaxed. The drug trade has moved in and exploited all of this disorder, which is affecting businesses in the Rio Grande neighborhood. So city and county leaders have been trying to work all of this out. And they've decided that what the city needs is a better system. Not just beds, but resources and programs. But, and this is a big one, where do you put those programs? Those living near the four sites chosen for these new shelters are worried, of course. How will they work? What if they don't? So that's what we're talking about today in the program. And we invite you to join us after the news.
Take Radio West wherever you go with KUER's mobile app for Android and iPhone. Public radio is always a swipe away with KUER's mobile app, free and available for download right now in your mobile phone's app store.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The Road Home Shelter in downtown Salt Lake City was built to provide a bed for about 500 people. Tonight, about 1,200 will be crammed into that space, and I don't have to say why this is a problem. If you get near the Rio Grande neighborhood around Pioneer Park, you've seen the consequences of those numbers. At least one drug cartel is believed to be regularly working in the area, exploiting those with substance abuse problems. The city and the county has known about this problem for years, and not long ago, they started this process of figuring out what to do. And one of their insights, which we'll talk about today, was to come up with a comprehensive plan to tackle the problem, to create a system with programs and resources rather than just a bed and a hot meal. Now, part of this program involved building more than just one of these resource centers. At first, officials had two in mind. That's become four. And just where those centers go has become a big part of the story. Some residents who live in the areas where these centers will be built are understandably nervous about what this will mean for the safety of their neighborhoods and the value of their houses. And some have been critical of the process. They say they haven't been included enough. Okay, so let's set the table first with Whitney Evans, who, of course, is a reporter here at KUER. She's been covering this issue for some time now. I should also mention in February, she's going to be hosting a KUER forum discussion about all of this. And Whitney's here in the studio. Welcome.
Hi, Doug.
All right, so just broadly give us a sense of how you identify, like, what is the essential problem here that got this thing started?
Well, the problem is that the current system is completely overwhelmed. Like you mentioned, the Road Home was originally created to serve about 500 people, and tonight there will probably be around 1,200 people there trying to find a place to sleep and get services. A lot of these people are victim to, like you said, the drug trade. And so there's a huge concentration of people, especially in the Rio Grande area. And that's affecting everyone. It's affecting the people who are staying down there. It's affecting the neighbors. It's affecting the businesses. And I think city and county leaders are looking for a way to approach this differently than it has been approached in the past, which is the shelter system that currently exists is sort of a place for people to, a warehouse for people to go sleep. And they can get services, but sometimes those services can take a really, really long time because we're dealing with so many people. So the approach now is to make a shelter more than a shelter.
Yeah.
Make a shelter a place where people can flow through and into other services and potentially housing.
The takeaway of this new program, this is to create a system rather than just house people, as you said, that they want to address the problems in the first place about why people are homeless, I suppose.
That's right. It's going to include treatment services. And I think the most important thing to realize here is when we're breaking it down into four different shelters, we're going to have smaller groups of people, which are much easier to handle, much easier to cope with, so people can get more individualized support.
A lot of attention is being paid right now, at least in terms of the story, and I know this is the part that you're covering, to the siting of these four shelters. Now, I think I'm assuming most people know that's where we are at the in the process, that at first there was a proposal for two, of these shelters. Now that's turned into four of these sort of smaller resource center shelters. And we'll talk about the particulars as we go. But talk about how contentious this part has been in the story.
Well, people are really upset because this was the one piece of this puzzle that they didn't necessarily have input. They were invited to a number of meetings prior to the site selection. They were invited to talk about what they want these shelters to look like and how they want them to be designed and how to mitigate potential issues with surrounding neighbors. But when it came down to the actual selection of these sites, when it came down to, you know, the real estate decisions, people didn't have a say. And I think people were really upset about that.
They will have a chance, and we'll get to this also later on the program, to participate in these workshops that are going to be going on this month, as I understand it. But one resident said at a meeting last night, we don't want to just pick the paint colors. Like, we want to be involved. Do we have any sense of just how involved residents may be in the creation of these centers?
It's my understanding, and the folks here can correct me if I'm wrong, but the meeting's coming up starting on January 11th. These residents will have an opportunity to help decide sort of what populations will go into which individual shelters. We're dealing with several different types of populations. I know the mayor said last night that she supports making the Simpson Avenue, where the current daycare is, making the Simpson Avenue location for women and children.
Yeah, Simpson Avenue has been particularly contended. And again, we'll get to that as we go along. Give me a final sense of this. What's the ideal end game, Whitney, do you think?
I guess from my perspective, the end game is to make sure that people who need a place to sleep at night have a place to sleep, but they're also getting the services they need to help them get homes, to make sure that people have a place to sleep at night, to make sure people are getting the services they need and that they're not waiting years to get those services.
And I guess the question is it risky? Like, if you close the road home, and there's a question of when that will be done, will it work? Will it make the I guess these are still questions up in the air that we'll have to wait to see, I suppose.
A lot of people are concerned about the closure of the road home because they see that, well, what we're doing is planning a shelter system that's going to support 500 to 600 people. And the road home currently shelters 1,100 people or so. And they're worried about what happens when the road home closes. What happens to the other half? Essentially, we're cutting the number of shelter beds in half. Well, a lot of people are saying, what is the overarching plan here? We don't know specifically how this is going to work. The goal is to create some sort of low-income housing plan where we can place many of these people. And people like Glenn Bailey, for instance, who did an op-ed for the Salt Lake Tribune, the Crossroads Urban Center, he's worried that there is no overarching housing plan that specifically says how many housing units are we going to need by the time these shelters are open? How much is that going to cost? Who's going to pay for it? And how long is that going to take? And I think that's what a lot of service providers are worried about, and frankly, probably what a lot of residents are worried about.
So a lot at stake. Okay. Whitney Evans of KUER News. Thanks very
Thank
much
you.
For joining us. All right. We have a full house here. Let me introduce those who are joining us. We have the county mayor, Salt Lake County Mayor Ben McAdams with us. And Mayor, welcome to you. Thanks
Great
for being
Thanks
with us.
To be here.
Also have the city mayor, Salt Lake City Mayor Jackie Biskupski. Mayor, welcome to you.
Thank you, Doug.
Thanks for being with us. We have Derek Kitchen, who's a member of the Salt Lake City Council. He represents District 4, which includes the road home. And Councilman Kitchen, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. And Pamela Atkinson is also with us. As probably you all know, a lifelong, longtime advocate for homeless, low-income, and refugee families and individuals in this state. She's an advisor to the governor and is the namesake of the Pamela Atkinson Homeless Trust Fund. We have a link to all of that, by the way, on our website. And Pamela Atkinson, welcome to you.
Thank you.
What's the problem? Mayor McAdams, let me start with you. I know this is one of the things that you've been thinking about. Mayor Biskupski, you too. How do you identify the problem that you're trying to fix?
I think the difference between flow and capacity. I think when you're going through the airport and there's a long line and spilling out of the line, and you can do a couple of things. You can put up more stanchions to make the line, a longer line, more organized, or you can get somebody else to help people move through. So it's an issue of flow versus capacity. Mm-hmm. The capacity of our system is overflowing right now. Do we want to build more capacity, or do we want to increase the flow, connect people to services so they can get through, so we can get them, shorten the line, shorten the wait list for services, so we can get people out on their own 2 feet, stable, self-reliant. And so that's kind of where the debate is right now. What I'd like to see, and I don't want to speak for Mayor Biskupski, but I think we are in agreement. What we want to see is better flow. We think if we can increase the flow and get people through the services, getting the help they need, be it drug treatment or job training connected to jobs and housing, we can actually shorten the line. And shelter's not a great place to house people. It is just a warehouse. And it's great that we live in a community where we're able to alleviate immediate suffering. But the goal isn't to alleviate immediate suffering. The goal is to help people to become stable and self-reliant. And so we want to focus our time, our attention, our dollars on increasing the flow. And by doing so, we can not grow the capacity and ideally even shrink the capacity. We may not need a shelter of 1,100 beds if we have better services to get people out of shelter and back into housing.
Mayor Biskupski, how do you see it? The essential sort of nature of the problem that it's about. Are you sort of in agreement with Mayor McAdams?
Sure, I completely agree with what Mayor McAdams is saying, but I'll also add to that that one of the greatest concerns in the city is the criminal element that has infiltrated our homeless population and the ripple effect of that throughout our entire city. And what we are trying to address in breaking up this population is taking away this avenue for the drug dealers to prey on hundreds of people all at the same time who are vulnerable and do their drug dealing. We have got to shut that opportunity down for the drug market here.
And so you think by dispersing these centers, you can do that. But of course, there's always the argument that these cartels will just move into the neighborhoods. That's one of the worries of neighbors.
You know, if you look at other, there are dozens of resources in our community where, 100 plus people are living in a space, you know, whether it's an apartment building or it's a condominium unit or whatever it is. And you don't see drug dealers hanging out outside the door waiting. These new resource centers
are... So what are you saying? Loitering is the problem. People on the streets is the problem. Is that what
Well, because what happens is in the morning, everyone who slept in the shelter is sent to the streets. And that's hundreds of people. It's 1,000 plus. And all of a sudden, drug dealers are hiding amongst them. And it creates a real significant issue that, again, I will say, has had a tremendous ripple effect on our entire city.
Pamela Atkinson, let me ask you, and I know I shouldn't suggest that the homeless as a population is one monolithic group. How do you identify, I guess the question is, how many of these are people who are single mothers who don't have resources? How many are LGBT youth who've been kicked out of homes? How many are veterans, for example, with mental health issues? How many have substance abuse? I mean, it's so hard to identify what the need is because it seems like they're all so different in their needs.
Well, you have to look at a continuum of homelessness, and people are on different parts of that continuum. You can take a family, a single mom with 3 kids, and put them into a rapid rehousing program. They don't have many other problems, the loss of a job, not enough backup cash. And in 2 to 3 weeks, they can be in a job training, in a new job, out into the community again. But then when you get a family that has a multiplicity of problems, they're on a different part of the continuum. And what we envision for these centers, people will be assessed and screened before they go into those centers. So the people you see down on Rio Grande right now with the outrageous behavior that's coming from spice and heroin, mm-hmm. those are not going to be the people that you see in those resource centers. Excuse me. We're going to be able to take people, put them into the resource centers, and think about it, Doug. 150 people in the resource center, family of 5 comes in. they've only got 145 other people there. Is that not more conducive to healing from the trauma of homelessness than 900 other people in the same situation, all vying for the attention of case managers?
So is what you're saying in some ways, if the public, if the people in live, and Derek Kitchen, I'll put this to you, if the people understood that dynamic, they wouldn't be as worried as they are. They wouldn't be packing, you know, libraries for these public hearings, because the image in their mind they have is the road home shelter, the overflow, the sometimes violence. But that's not the image you have in mind, and people don't maybe understand that.
I think that's exactly it. You know, the road home has done successfully exactly what we've asked it to do for the last 30 years. But what we're doing now is realigning the entire service system. To Mayor Biskupski's point about the drug trade, that is a symptom of a system that is not working, of a shelter that is not effectively treating people who are experiencing homelessness. And so the nature of the problem really boils down to the lack of affordable housing. And so as we look at realigning the system, we're bringing on new housing units, we're connecting folks to mental health care, substance abuse treatment. What the community is not understanding is that the facilities that they will be receiving in the neighborhoods, the new facilities, are going to be radically different. And in some ways, if you look at the VOA Youth Resource Center on 9th South and 4th West or the YWCA, these facilities can actually be catalytic economic development drivers for some of these neighborhoods. And so there's a lot of fear in the air around what the new facilities are going to be, because all they have to imagine is the road
home.
It's
Rio Grande. Yeah, yeah. I thought we had figured this out. You know, you remember in 2015, I think it was, when the city was getting a lot of attention because it was perceived as being on the cutting edge, you know, of dealing with chronic homelessness, and that we had these housing solutions that were going to be a model. Was that not necessarily true, or is this a different story?
You know, I think it was true in the sense that the state of Utah has been lauded nationally for what we've done to address chronic homelessness. But people, when they hear chronic homelessness, they just think that's another word for homeless. Mm. Chronic homelessness is a subset of our population. These are the people who are fairly benign, but have been homeless for over a year, according to federal standards. And the approach that Utah took with that was housing first. So we said, we're going to get these people into permanent supportive housing, recognizing that there's mental illness and other challenges that it's going to take time for them to heal. And so we're going to get them into housing, but then we're going to, with that housing, bring wraparound services. But the idea was that if you lead with housing first, the other services can follow. And that has been very successful. We've seen our chronic homeless population that has been reduced to near zero. There are still other homeless populations that we see that we're trying to grapple with.
And who's down there on loitering right now in Rio Grande? Who's that?
One of the largest populations is one we've coined the term of persistently homeless. These are people who are homeless less than a year, but frequently homeless and for periods of time of greater than 3 months. They're oftentimes, when they're not homeless, they're in the Salt Lake County Jail. We have families is the largest growing segment of our homeless population, who you know, as Pamela was referencing, these are people who have lost a home due to the inability to pay rent, and they find themselves in shelter. That's the largest growing segment. And so in some ways, I think I hear people say a lot of times that Utah is a national model in dealing with homelessness. I think that's true. I also hear people say that the challenges that we face with homelessness right now is worse than it's ever been. I think those statements are both true. Hmm. And that's kind of what we're trying to grapple with here.
Why do they come here? Any of you? What is Utah, and is Utah unique? It seems like most urban populations have a homelessness issue, at least, or problem. Some have said Utah is unique in some ways. Pamela Atkinson, is that true?
It is in some ways, but even on Christmas Day, when we were out delivering meals to the camps, we found people we'd never met before. They were in their tents, knee-deep in snow, but they came here for jobs. And they've realized the jobs they came here for, they don't exist. So we spent some time teaching people, excuse me, how to get training for the new jobs. You know, a lot of the factory jobs, robots are doing them. So we talked about the fact that you have to learn how to fix robots. But what we're seeing down on the Rio Grande, it's a new group of people I have not seen before. Mm. And they've got masses of their belongings with them. So asking them the questions, why are you here and where did you come from? They came from Utah, but they had to choose between their addiction to opioids and their rent, and they chose the addiction. That's why you see so many people with so much of their stuff out there. They're not interested in treatment. They're not interested in coming into the shelter and help. It's going to be very hard. That's why we have to take a look at the state law and the federal laws governing taking people in voluntarily and involuntarily.
How much of this, Mayor Biskupski, is a state issue? How much of this is a city-county issue?
This is a state issue. And
does the state know that?
Yes, and they have been great partners. You know, what people need to understand is that for the very first time, the state, the county, the city, other cities are saying the capital city belongs to all of us, and we care about it, and we want to help you change what has happened. And resources were funneled into a Medicaid expansion piece. You know, we know how hard it is to get Medicaid expansion in this state. Yet the state said yes to setting aside $30 million for this expansion piece that we asked for specifically to help us treat this segment of our population. And we are just waiting to hear back from the federal government whether they will accept that request and that expansion and that waiver.
But you've also heard, you've been given, as I understand it anyway, a bit of a mandate by the legislature, by House Speaker Hughes, who said, if you guys can't figure this out by the end of this month, I think it is, we're going to step in and be more involved in the process. Do you want that, Mayor McAdams?
You know, I don't think so. I think Speaker Hughes has been great to work with, and really he's put significant dollars on the table to help us address these challenges.
But $27 million they've offered over the course of three years.
Yeah, over the course of 3 years, right. we've gotten about $9 million of that, and we're about to go into the next legislative session. So part of what he's saying is just the pragmatics of it. While he's been a supporter and been somebody that I've really enjoyed working with on this, he's saying, how do you push through the legislature funding as you're competing with so many other good causes? How do you push through this funding when we don't yet have a concrete plan? And I'm confident that we will have a concrete plan by the legislative session. So I think what I'm hearing from him is less a threat and more just a statement about the pragmatic realities of trying to get a significant amount of funding through the legislative.
Derek Kitchen, do you have a plan? Do you have a concrete plan? Speaker Hughes says, give us a plan. Mayor McAdams says, yeah, I think we're there. But there's a lot of question and fairly intense dispute, which we'll sort of get to here in a moment. But do you think the plan is settled?
So I think your question illustrates the reality that we have a lot of decision makers at the table here.
Right.
And, you know, I'm coming from city council and I represent downtown in the central city area. We're going to be receiving two of the new resource centers in addition to currently housing the Road Home in Rio Grande.
Are you cool with that?
Am I okay with that?
Yeah.
I represent the most urban part of our entire state. It's expected that we step up to the plate, and the residents of District 4 have been there. They are ready, willing, and able to step up and excited to be a part of the solution. I see that time and again in the community. And so, yes, we're ready. The plan ultimately has to hinge on housing.
Right.
And so that's the plan that the city council is pushing forward on. You saw on October 18th, the city council allocated about $21 million in cash for affordable housing.
Right.
That's unheard of. Nowhere else in the country do you have that much money set aside for affordable housing. Salt Lake City is making a mark for ourselves in the housing realm, and that's really where we need to put most of our focus.
But that's not what I'm talking about. Okay, so you want to get affordable housing dealt with. That's sort of the component. Are you saying that these four sites, which have been contentious, is settled?
The sites have been chosen, and
yeah,
we're moving forward with the new system. The county has spent, two-plus years looking at the collective impact model of realigning our service system, and the four locations are just the first step in achieving that broader goal,
right,
of better treating and better caring for people who are experiencing homelessness. So the sites have been chosen. Now we look at rolling that out. How do we work toward mitigation issues if we have a subpopulation that's going to maybe create additional concerns in a neighborhood? Right now, what we need to do is work on mitigation and effectively getting the system rolled out so that we can treat people and get people back into housing and back into stability ultimately.
Mayor Biskupski, you said something last night, as I understand it, at a meeting that suggested that you may be rethinking the Simpson Avenue site? Okay.
No.
Clear that up, if you would. Some people have heard a little bit of squishiness maybe on your part.
Well, what I was saying was that it was important for me to hear the concerns that people had and to listen to the communities. So we've been at a couple community council meetings this week, and we have another one tonight, and we are still listening. Ultimately, what I am hearing is people are not well informed on the new model, and we will do a better job of explaining it. The other piece that people were not aware of is that we have had preliminary discussions, both the city and the county, with builders and bankers and those who are very interested in playing their part in creating the housing stock that is needed for us to transition people from homelessness into housing. And the initial discussions that I have been in with major players in this community have been 1,000 beds while we are building these resource centers, and making sure those beds, the primary purpose is to move people from homelessness into those housing units. The players that I've had some discussion with are talking about creating a revolving fund of $100 million that could be used for the purpose of development. And so we will engage our Blue Ribbon housing team this month to start working and vetting out those initial discussions, coming together with a solid plan that we will move forward in 2017.
Let's take a break. That was, of course, Salt Lake City Mayor Jackie Biskupski. We have the county mayor, Salt Lake County Mayor Ben McAdams, with us. Pamela Atkinson is also with us. And we have Salt Lake City Councilman Derek Kitchen, who represents District 4. We'll take a break. Back in a quick moment. This is Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we've been exploring the contentious and confounding problem of what to do with homeless people in Salt Lake City. As you all know by now, in an effort to relieve the pressure on the Road Home Shelter in downtown Salt Lake City, which has struggled with drug use and violence, city and county leaders have proposed 4 new shelters, new sites. The reaction from the public, particularly those who live in these neighborhoods, has been critical. So we're exploring that part of the story, but also talking a little bit about how we got here in the first place. Salt Lake County Mayor Ben McAdams is with us. Salt Lake City Mayor Jackie Biskupski is with us. We have Salt Lake City Councilman Derek Kitchen. He represents District 4, which includes the Road Home, I should say. And, of course, the longtime advocate for homeless and low-income and refugee families, Pamela Atkinson, also with us. And, Pamela Atkinson, you wanted to say this was an important point. We were talking about this off air, that these shelters are only one part of a larger plan.
They're part of the overall solution. We learned a long time ago, compassion, kindness, and caring is just not enough anymore. You have to have strategic thinking and a solid strategic plan that many people have input into. So as we're looking at these resource centers, we're looking at, okay, how do we decrease the numbers? We need to decrease the homelessness problem. So we have to put a large amount of resources into prevention of homelessness occurring in the first place. And we could start with the schools. So signs and symptoms of kids being restless and they're getting ready to move again. The mobility rates amongst the schools far too high.
Wow.
You've also got the people with mental illness, some of that outrageous behavior down at the Rio Grande. You have to be able to institutionalize some people. You've got the detox problem, but you've got to have places where people can go for inpatient and outpatient treatment of their chemical addiction. You've got to work on the job programs and the education programs that, people need. So all of this goes into this strategic plan, and I'm not frightfully sure that the public are aware of all these pieces that are being discussed, a variety of people, about what it is we're all planning on having happen in the future.
Does the state have the political will and the awareness of that more holistic part of it? And the money?
Mm-hmm. The state is much more knowledgeable now after the last session. And even in the interim, I've had many conversations, as I know both mayors have. We have a meeting coming up next week to inform some of the leaders. And an informed and educated legislator is much more knowledgeable and helpful in terms of some of the plans. And they're ready to act as long as we show we have the planning in place.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Are you getting – is there the political will among state leaders to deal with this in a more holistic way?
I think so. I think we're at a unique window where Republicans and Democrats at the state level on down to the county and city are coming together to work on this. One of the things that I think we're recognizing is that – as Pamela says, this is not just about alleviating suffering by providing a meal and a bed. We need a much more – these problems are complicated. We need a much more complex system to address these challenges. And there's no single institution that can solve these challenges. It can't be the state or the county or the city alone. So part of what I think we're trying to do is create a framework where solutions can thrive. And that's what the collective impact approach is really about, is rather than an isolated impact that where individual providers or individual levels of government may have a stellar impact in their own right, but not impact the problem overall in any meaningful way. If we come together collectively and we know that job training is part of it, but drug treatment is also part of it, and behavioral health treatment is part of it, and how do we get all those pieces that are located in state, county, and city government, but also located in the nonprofit and the philanthropic and faith-based sectors, how do we get all those gears turning together to really move the needle at the system level collectively? And that's what we're trying to do with a redesign of the system, not just expand the system or try to sweep under the rug some of the challenges we see, but get the system working so that flow can happen. People can move through the system and exit successfully
How
from the system.
How expensive is it? Sounds incredible.
Well, it certainly
expensive.
Is. Yeah. It's cheap to provide a meal and a bed.
Yep.
But if you want to do more than that, it is more expensive. I think over the long term.
That's what I mean by political will. Do you have the political will from lawmakers to commit money? Because that's what it's going to take.
You know, I think the single biggest thing we can do to move the needle is settle on some form of Medicaid expansion. I've been a proponent of full Medicaid expansion, but anything will help. The House and the legislature passed a much more meager form of Medicaid expansion
last
session.
Yeah, they've been very reluctant.
They have. They put something on the table last session that would serve about 9,000 people. It would do a lot for the homeless population. It would not serve a lot of other populations in need, but it would do a lot for the homeless population. So for that reason, I supported that. Mayor Biskupski joined me in supporting that. We need to get something like that on the table. So I think there are solutions that are within our grasp, and hopefully we can get that done.
But that's a great question. The legislators, are they with us?
Yeah.
What they're looking for, what metrics are we using to measure? They want to see quantifiable outcomes. They want to see that data. So when we go to them and say, this is what happened with this block of money, and they can see the data, they become much more supportive.
And I think that question of cost is incredibly important as well, because when you look at treating people and getting them into stability and into housing and treatment options, it costs the whole community a lot less in the long run. If you look at just some of the data points that we have out of our emergency shelter in the Road Home right now, there's about 14% or so that are persistently homeless, that use about 64% or more of the resources.
Wow.
So it's incredibly expensive and inefficient to put people in emergency shelter. What we need to focus on is treatment and housing.
We have to talk about the controversy over the siting of these four resource centers, shelters, whatever you're calling them. Derek Kitchen, give me a sense of how intense this has been. You've received at least one threat on your life.
Yeah, and you know, Mayor Biskupski was with the city council in our formal meeting on Tuesday, and there was a man that, you know, got up and had to be detained and removed from the formal meeting. There, people have high emotions around this. And
I don't, by the way, want to characterize people who are opposed to these sites as dangerous and threatening. That's not what I meant, but it's gotten pretty intense.
Emotions are high, absolutely. And people care a great deal about their community and their neighborhoods and their children and their family. And I think that there's a lot of fear wrapped up into what these facilities are going to mean for them. And so that's why, to Mayors Biskupski and McAdams' point, we have to do a better job at communicating what these will be and what they won't be. And what these will be is something completely different. What they won't be are duplicates of Rio Grande.
Okay, so here's the big question that's come up. And a lot of residents are saying, you didn't really involve me in the system. And what the response has been from a lot of you is, yes, we did. In June, we had this, you know, we had, I think, 5 public hearings. You could answer these questions. About 1,100 of you played along and contributed. But the part that residents who are least upset about all of this were left out of is the actual siting of the places. And as I understand it, the excuse or the argument is, we couldn't tell you about it because we had to protect our bargaining power. Was that a mistake?
I don't think that was why we made the decision.
Okay, then to say, why didn't you tell these people before you here are the spots, now give us your public input before we lock this down? Because what it sounds like you did is pick the spots and lock it down. And that's what people are upset about.
And, you know, there was a process involved in that where the site evaluation committee took the time to review all potential sites.
There were about 11 in
total? Use the criteria to analyze those sites, give us feedback on them. The council and I took that feedback. We pored over it. We evaluated the sites. And at the end of the day, what was important to us as elected officials was that we didn't create a community that was battling amongst itself. And what I found when I walked out of the chamber on Tuesday and what I heard again last night was, this resource center is okay if it's on Foothill. Or it's okay if it's on Redwood Road.
In other words, not in my neighborhood?
Right. Yeah. And a lot less about it just not being okay, period.
Yeah.
And what our reality is, it was evolving in these meetings. And that was community saying, this community can handle it, but we shouldn't have to.
So it's a no-win proposition if you rely on residents who live in these neighborhoods because they're just going to say, don't put it here. And how helpful is that? Is that what you're saying?
Well, what it does is it essentially is saying, you know, it's okay in your part of the city, but not mine.
Yeah.
And that kind of battle ends up nowhere.
Right. Mayor McAdams, I want to hear you on this point, too.
You know, I think I want to give all respect to the city. I think they had a tough decision to make with these siting these facilities, and that's never easy. I think there's a role for public engagement to hear from the public. And you know, we're elected to make hard decisions. I think the city has made a hard decision. I think it's always good to err on the side of soliciting input from the public. Oftentimes, we don't know what we don't know until we've heard from the public. And I think what you've seen over the last couple of days is that that public engagement is happening. And I see Mayor Biskupski and Councilman Kitchen and others are listening to the public. So that is happening right now. And I think
but to the direct question, though, whether or not it was maybe a misstep not to – are you in line with Mayor Biskupski on this? Because you have said you've wondered whether or not there's been enough public input, at least on the siting point.
I think it was a tough decision for them, and I want to be respectful for my colleagues. I think they've really shouldered this siting, and it's a difficult decision for them to make. I would have erred on the side of you know, some additional public engagement, but I think that that's happening now.
One resident, an observer of this process, this is Alexa McCallum. She's was quoted by the Salt Lake Tribune. She said that moving from 2 sites to 4. Because that was part of the conversation. Your recommendation initially was 2.
That's right.
And then the council said, no, let's split them up even more and do 4. And this resident, who's a lawyer, Alexa McCallum, said that moving to 4 sites meant that you had to sacrifice public input. Is that true, Derek Kitchen, do you think?
So the reason why we moved from two sites to four sites is because we received a flood of public input from our residents. And what we heard time and again is that we don't want large facilities. We want smaller, compact facilities. Our commitment to the state of Utah and the legislature is to construct 500 beds. The plan initially was to do two facilities at 250 beds. No community thought that that was a good idea. So with Mayor Biskupski, the city council made the decision that it was better to do smaller facilities that would integrate better into the community and that could offer more direct and targeted treatment.
But was public input sacrificed when you decided to go with those four? Are you with Mayor Biskupski on the point that if you solicit input endlessly, it just won't be terribly helpful?
So I think it's really important for the community to understand roles. And in our form of government, the mayor is in charge of property acquisition. So the city council allocated money, and then we instructed Mayor Biskupski to go forward and choose the sites. And we, as the city council, are supporting her in that because this is the right thing to do.
Well, let me clarify that, because the sites were chosen by all of us,
right?
Not just the mayor. It's my job to purchase them, but not to choose them. And the sites, when we all were looking at the sites, we all ended up picking the same four sites. In whatever order, they all landed in the top four. And that included all council members. And so I think...
But you're hearing from council members now who are saying, Lise Adams among them, I don't want to do Simpson Avenue. Aaron Mendenhall has said, I don't want to do Simpson Avenue. That wasn't part of the deal, or at least there's some sense. Now, this gets into sort of council mayor politics, I get, but it doesn't seem like there's consensus now on those four, Simpson being the one that people seem to have a problem with. How are you reacting to that?
You know, I'll be clear that it's disappointing because in the reality—
Because we agreed. Is that what you're saying?
Everyone agreed.
Yeah, okay.
And everyone had the same four sites in their top four picks. So it's disappointing for sure. I understand the pressure on Councilwoman Adams. You know, I understand that. At the end of the day, though, what all council members and myself and everyone involved understands is that the harsh realities of the Rio Grande neighborhood are having negative impacts already on all of our neighborhoods, and that it is time to utilize the tremendous support coming from every angle, whether it's the state or community members or the county. This is at a point where everyone is ready to change the dynamics. And the process that's been created over the last 2 years to do that has tremendous buy-in from heavy hitters all around the state.
Doug, I want to hit on something Mayor Biskupski said, which is the goal is to change the dynamic. I think a lot of people see your neighborhood as receiving a mini Rio Grande, and that's not what would happen. You know,
That does seem to be the image.
You know, and I think when you look at it, the system we have right now, if the goal is to provide a meal and a bed, the ideal size of that facility is as large as you can get it, because the more people you pack in there, the cheaper it is. You can always squeeze in another bed and water down the soup and provide another meal and a bed. That's the cheapest. If you want to treat people like individuals and help to address their root cause of crisis and help to not have a disruption on the surrounding community, the ideal size there is one. Right. What we're trying to do is land somewhere in the middle. So I still stand by my recommendation that I think
two
facilities by 250 works. It doesn't mean
one for men and one for women, basically.
Yeah, well, what we were looking at is really kind of four facilities but located in two places where you'd have separate entrances and they'd be segregated spaces, but they could locate in two. Mm-hmm. The city council felt that four would be better. That works for me. I don't think there's anything magic about 250 or 150. Smaller is better, but we got to balance the economies of scale versus the impact on the neighborhood and the ability to service the individualized populations. I still think from our perspective, two sites of 250 works, but four sites of 150 also works. And so that's kind of the give and take that you're seeing here. And I would just reassure the listeners that that's healthy. That's the dialogue between the state and the county and the city and the public as we're going back and forth and refining and listening to them and the plan is evolving. And I think it's healthy. And going back to Mayor Biskupski, what we are doing is changing the dynamic. These are not going to be – we're not replicating the same problem in a smaller fashion throughout the city. We're changing the dynamic.
Some of the questions that we're getting from listeners, we've already addressed some that we haven't quite yet. Would somebody quickly address this question, why Salt Lake City is bearing the burden of these sites? That seemed like a kind of obvious question.
Yeah,
right?
Well, I can say I think that's Salt Lake City is getting a lot of the attention of these sites right now. But there are sites located throughout the state and the county. So I think that's true and not true in the sense we're talking about a detox facility in Murray. We have a facility in Sandy right now that the county operates for foster kids, kids who have aged out of foster care who are homeless. We have domestic violence shelters located elsewhere in the county. So it is spread throughout the county. And one of the things we're looking to do is we hope to shrink the shelter population from 1,100 to 600. The way we're going to do that is housing that's located throughout the entire county.
But the big question is, what if you don't? In fact, let me take another call, which I think may get at least in essence to this. Jen has been waiting. Jen, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. This is Jen Colby, a District 4 resident and former city council candidate. And my question is, especially with both mayors on the Road Home Board, why hasn't the day shelter issue been addressed already? And with the numbers, current numbers in the short term, what's going to happen to all those people who may not make it into right into the resource centers eventually and also currently just have nowhere to go?
That's a good question. And, you know, it gets to the I think one of the concerns of Glenn Bailey at the Crossroads Urban Center is, all right, in theory, this sounds like a great comprehensive, holistic way of dealing with the homeless. But in the meantime, don't close that thing yet, or what are you going to do? So I want you to address that.
Yeah, so I actually agree with Glenn. I think I really appreciated his op-ed. The last paragraph of his op-ed said that, you know, it's a noble goal. I think we all agree it's a noble goal. Shelter's not a great place to put people. We don't want them to just expand the shelter system. What we want is, but we don't want them on the street. Shelter's better than the street, but it's not the great place for them. So the goal of reducing capacity of the shelter system by increasing the flow of services is a noble goal. The question is, can we do that? And there is that X factor there. So I agree with Glenn is that that's our goal. And as we do that, what we would see is the Rio Grande shelter being incrementally downsized. As we open a new facility of 150 beds, we would reduce the Rio Grande shelter by 150 beds. And that the goal is to reduce the demand. I mean, you can approach this in two ways. You can reduce the supply of shelter, or you can reduce the demand for shelter. And the way I'm looking at this is we want to reduce the demand for shelter. And as we reduce the demand, we will incrementally downsize the Rio Grande shelter to the point that we can ultimately close it. But it won't because we arbitrarily cut off the supply and send people to the street. It's because our program has worked. The services are available. We've expanded Medicaid. People are connected to the services. They're now in housing and they're stable. And we just don't need 1,100 beds.
What do you, Pamela Atkins, yep. I want to hear you on this.
Your caller mentioned a day shelter. We have a Wigan day center right opposite Rio Grande. It's part of Catholic Community Services. It was built at businesses' request some years ago because of the panhandlers and other homeless people hanging around. Unfortunately, the financial support did not come in. It has not been expanded. Skaggs went ahead and funded it. But in that day center right now, they can get case management. They can get laundry services. They can get referrals, resources, place their belongings, quite a few services. And on days like this, it opens early in the morning, stays open until St. Vincent de Paul opens at nighttime.
Are you worried, though, that if we don't figure this out and how long it may take and how long we might need the Road Home to deal with this until we...
Well, I think the matter of needing the Road Home, we're not going to know until later down the road. And, you know, there's no specific
date. Therefore, keep
it
open until?
It has to stay open until We've got the resource centers open, and these other plans have been implemented in terms of...
So the road home stays open for at least another couple of years?
I think you would see it incrementally downsized over a period of time. Another thing that's in the mix...
Because that's going to frustrate business leaders in the Rio Grande area that they want this sucker closed fast.
But you can't close it if there's still people who need it. But it's an incremental pathway that we're taking there.
Sorry to interrupt.
I was going to say the county launched a program just in last month, a social impact bond or pay for success to connect people, these persistently homeless, connect them to housing. So it would be rental-based assistance, housing vouchers with a treatment component to get them out of shelter and get them into housing. So that's some of it, too, that we hope, you know, it's not just a hope and a prayer. We have concrete plans that we're working on to reduce the demand for shelter, not reduce the supply, but to reduce the demand for shelter. It's building new facilities. It's pay for success, our homes not jail program, where we're taking people who cycle between shelter and jail and paying to get them out, to get them stabilized, paying the providers, reimbursing the providers if they successfully deliver the outcome of stabilizing individuals. So there are numerous plans that are in the works. You know, I have a high degree of confidence in what we've developed.
Mayor Biskupski, what's the piece that is crucial in order to get this taken care of? Derek Kitchen suggested earlier it's the affordable housing component. Is that about right?
It is definitely a piece of this, for sure, because we have to have the housing stock to transition people who have gotten the help they need from a resource center into a housing component. And
so do you have a plan? Do you think your plan is to deal with that? Is there?
You know, it is. It's evolving. And, you know, the city has its own housing plan that we're launching on top of what we are working on with community members. And I think what people will find is that finally, not only is the city and the county and the state realizing that the current shelter system isn't working, neither is how we are supplying the housing stock. And everyone is coming to the table saying, I want to help you solve the housing problem as well.
We don't have a lot of time left, but let me give you all just a quick moment to say finally, it's been contentious lately. There are a lot of questions, a lot of concerns about neighbors who might be in these areas and all of these kinds of things. But how are you feeling right now about the prospects for all of this? Derek Kitchen, if you would begin.
You know, I'm feeling incredibly optimistic. It's rare to see so many stakeholders at a table and to stay at a table for this long. We see from the state of Utah, some of our legislators, including the lieutenant governor, prioritizing affordable housing and seeing how important this is. The reality is that a family should not have to spend more than 30% of their income on housing. And, you know, we cannot control the global or national winds, economically speaking. So if there's a downturn, who's to say that people aren't going to slide into homelessness like this? And so housing has got to be part of it, and I'm feeling incredibly optimistic.
Mayor Pekanis?
You know, I would reiterate again that public safety is also a component of this. It is about compassion, and it's about helping the homeless get on their feet. But we have two problems. One is the challenges that are facing our homeless community, but they're oftentimes victims of a drug trade. As they're trying to overcome addiction, there are people pushing these drugs. And so Mayor Biskupski and I partnered earlier in 2016 on Operation Diversion. That says, look, we recognize there's a need for compassion. There is also a role for law enforcement and jail and incarceration in this. And so what we're trying to do is separate the wheat from the tares, and so to speak. Who are the people who are fragile, who may have a substance use disorder and need treatment, not jail, but treatment, and get them into treatment? That's going to cost the taxpayer less and help these individuals get stabilized. But those people who are preying upon our homeless, who are pushing drugs upon our homeless, they need to be prosecuted and incarcerated, and we need to take a hard line with those.
We're essentially out of time. Mayor Biskupski, do you want to say a final thought?
I totally agree with Ben on that element of this. The criminal element has to be addressed. And I know the county is also looking at another program around a community correction center. And that, too, would be helpful.
Pamela Atkinson, I'll give you the final word.
Okay. I'm very optimistic. I think it's collaboration. TEAM, team, acronym. Together, everyone achieves more. And I think what we need to do at this point in the selected sites, we need to make sure that every resident has a list of what will not happen because of the plans that are in place with public safety, the police, and some of us know the plans and others don't. But I think we need to all work together, but we need to listen to the complaints that people have and come up with answers.
It's Pamela Atkinson. We also have Derek Kitchen, Salt Lake City Councilman representing District 4. Thank you very much. Thank you, Pamela Atkinson. You. And the mayors, Salt Lake County and Salt Lake City, Ben McAdams and Jackie Biskupski. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. Technical direction from Tim Slover. Our thanks to him. I'm Doug Fabrizio.